Couple of days later, when they swung down from the dusty saddles at the settlement on the Bighorn, Pat Oilman pulled his rifle from the boot.
No more of this for me. I'm staying here and settling this affair once and for all. I'm weary of running like a frightened child.
Jerry and Valdez nodded in agreement. This was the last stop for them as well. The others just looked at the men and shook their heads.
I wish you boys would think on that some. I'm gonna head for a hole later on and round up some more boys.
Nah, this is as far as I run.
Pat solemnly shook hands with everybody and led his horse to the stable. He was followed by Valdez and Jerry.
We'll resupply and immediately move on. We can't afford the luxury of bathing and grooming. Let's buy what we need and get out.
Valdez, Jerry, and Pat watched the party ride out of town from a table by the window in a saloon. Pat hadn't sought the advice of the local doctor about the festering wound in his hip, because he didn't figure he had much longer to live anyway. He took out a pen and started laboriously printing on a piece of paper he'd bummed from the bartender, who was definitely nervous about the men being in his place of business. He'd heard about Von Hausen. News traveled swiftly in the West, and he wanted no part of Smoke Jensen.
What are you doing?
Making out my last will and testament. Then I'm gonna give it to that lawyer across the street.
I didn't know you had anybody to leave nothing to, Pat.
I don't. I'm leaving it to my horse.
Your horse?
Yep. He's a good one. I ain't worth a damn, but that shouldn't be no reflection on my horse. I'm gonna see to it that he lives out the rest of his days eating and getting fat and being lazy.
That ain't a bad idea. Do it for my horse, too. How about you, Valdez?
I don't give a damn what happens to my horse. How do you know we're not going to ride out of this dismal place?
A rancher at the next table smiled.
Because the telegraph down the road says Smoke Jensen's about a half a day behind you, boys, that's why. I'll see to it that your boys' horses are put out to pasture and live a good life if you want me to. I admire a man who takes care of his horse.
Thanks.
The rancher looked at Valdez.
You can go to hell.
Valdez started to get up from the table, but he stopped halfway at the sound of several hammers being eared back. Four of the rancher's hands stood at the bar, six guns in their hands.
Sit down. The way I figure it, you got maybe 6 or 8 hours to live at the most. Might as well enjoy that time. Besides, I don't want to miss this fight.
Valdez sat, being very careful to keep both hands on the table.
I'll take care of your horse too, Mex, because I like horses.
Well, boys, I'm going to get me a bit of grub, and then I'm going to take me a snooze into that tree yonder. I reckon I'd better get in the habit of being stretched out.
The day wore on with its usual never-deviating pace. Finally, the three men spotted a lone rider coming into town. A big man on an even bigger Appaloosa.
That's Jensen.
Valdez stood up and slipped the thongs from the hammers of his guns. Jerry rose and slipped his guns in and out of leather a couple of times. Pat Oilman shifted his chair around. His hip was hurting him so bad he was afraid if he stood up he'd fall down. Smoke rode slowly up the short street.
Oh, I'm surrendering. I want a trial.
We ain't got no badge toter here. Law's 100 miles away, nearabouts. Besides, we heard all about you boys ambushing that army patrol and trying to murder them women in the park. You're gonna get a trial, all right. And the judge is coming through the door right about now.
Smoke slowly stepped into the bar. He stared at the three men, with cold fire burning in his eyes.
Valdez the back shooter. Angel told me about you.
Hey, hey, was a low-down rotting snake. I'd kill him as soon as I blast you out of your boots.
Pat Oilman raped and then killed your stepsister. Broke jail and killed a deputy in the process.
You writing a book, Jensen?
I don't know your name, you useless piece of horse shit.
Watkins! Jerry Watkins! I'm gonna blast your teeth right through the back of your skull!
Yeah, we'll see.
I don't take that kind of talk from any man.
Then I guess it's time, Valdez.
Sweet Jesus! You killed them all. I never even seen you draw.
Yeah. That's what I do.
Say, Smoke, when we heard about this Von Hassenut feller, I sent a hand down to the nearest wire office and telegraphed the sheriff's office and told him I'd be glad to round up some boys and tend to this matter personal. He wired back and told me that couldn't nobody arrest this feller. Is that right?
I'm afraid so. I don't really understand it all. Something about being immune from prosecution.
Well, that don't make a damn bit of sense to me.
It doesn't to me either, but I guess it's the law.
The sheriff said that you'd probably be in trouble if you killed this Von Hossenhoof.
Well, I'll just have to get in trouble then, because I'm damn sure gonna kill him.
What about these women?
I don't know. I'd sure hate to hurt a woman. If I can help it, I won't.
Smoke told the rancher about Andrea killing her husband. How she shot him and left him to die.
You don't mean it.
Sure do. I talked with a fellow a few minutes before he died. He was a real prince.
I seen him when they come in this morning. Them was some hard old boys riding with the nobility. I recognized John T. and Cat Brown. Funny thing, Smoke. That Von Hasselheffer and them folks with him all dressed up like nothing I ever seen. They didn't none of them look crazy. They may try to recruit more men at the hole.
Yeah, they probably will. These people seem to have money to burn. I'll just have to deal with that problem, if it arises, when I come to it.
What exactly is the hole?
Von Hausen's group had camped for the night, eaten supper, and were drinking coffee before turning in.
It's about 50 miles south of a brand new town called Buffalo and due east of the Powder River. Used to be run by a man called Pokerface Carey. I don't know whether he's still there or not. It's a shanty town of shacks and a couple saloons. I'll angle over that way in a couple days, see if anyone's interested in hooking up with us.
How many days to Dodge City?
Hey, long, hard ride, missy. I'd hate to even guess. We're days away from Dodge.
Get 10 men. 10 good men who are fast with the gun and who aren't afraid of Smoke Jensen. We'll pay each one $100 a day and $1,000 bonus apiece if they'll get us to Dodge City.
I don't expect I'll have much trouble getting 10 pretty good old boys.
One Eye's there. I know him. And I'm pretty sure Dick Dorman's still there.
You know Dick?
Sure.
Soon as we hit Bighorns, you angle off and beat it for the hole. We'll meet up on the South Fork of the Powder. You know the crossing?
Utah nodded.
Yeah, I had me a partner once named a Slickfinger Bob. He'll do to ride the river with. He was using the hole before it became so known. Get him if he's there.
Hey, see if an old boy named Barton is there. Henry Barton's his name. Tell him to come on. Mention my name.
Ask around for Sandy Beecher. He's a good one, too.
Later, Marlene lay beside Von Hausen near the edge of camp.
Getting to Dodge City is only a part of the trip, mein Liebling. What happens to us after the men are paid off and gone?
Gunter will go in alone. You've noticed the beard he's growing. He'll be dressed like a cowhand. He'll contact that attorney and get the money. We'll pay the men off and one by one go in and catch the train. Jensen will be looking for us east. We won't go east. We'll head back west to San Francisco and take the long way home. By the time we get back, all this will have been forgotten.
I wish we did not have to go to Dodge City. We are placing ourselves in a great deal of danger by doing so.
So do I. But we couldn't risk taking that much money with us. These desperados would have killed us the first night on the trail. I had to set it up this way for our safety. I think with the men from this whole place we'll make it. If nothing else, they'll buy us some time.
Do you suppose Valdez and the others might have killed Jensen?
I doubt it, but it's a nice thought to go to sleep on, isn't it?
No.
The next day, Gil Webb rode to the hole, and he came away with 10 salty old boys who thought they could handle Smoke Jensen. What they were thugs and petty thieves and riffraff and horse-stealing bums. They were good with a gun, though. I gotta give the devil his due. And any of them would kill for the pennies off a dead man's eyes.
Now, this here's One Eye Slim.
John T. introduced the man to Von Hausen. Von Hausen looked at One Eye, and both his eyes seemed fine.
He likes to gouge out the eye anyone he fights.
Wonderful. We all have our little quirks.
Then Von Hausen was introduced to Dick Dorman.
He can do a border roll faster than you can blink.
Von Hausen and his company didn't have the foggiest idea what a border roll was, and none of them was particularly interested in finding out.
Slickfinger Bob.
Von Hausen waited for some explanation for the nickname. John T. shrugged his shoulders.
I don't really know why they call him that.
Next, Von Hausen was introduced to Henry Barton, Sandy Beecher, Frank Clover, John Flagg, Joe Elliott, Terry Smith, and Ed Clay. They were the most disreputable-looking human beings Von Hausen had ever seen in all his life. He was loath to turn his back on them.
We'll pull out in the morning.
Smoke stopped to chat with a drifting cowboy on the trail.
There's some old bad boys camped up yonder by the crossing. That many bad ones all in a bunch spells trouble for somebody.
How far ahead?
No more than 5 miles. You'll see their smoke. Altogether, there must be about 20, 25 of them. I got the hell out of there.
Thanks. Hi-yah!
When he spotted the smoke from their campfires, he found a good place to picket his horse. Smoke took off his boots and slipped into his worn moccasins. He took the .44-40 from his second saddle boot and moved out while he still had about a half an hour of daylight. He stopped about 500 yards from the big camp and looked it over. The men were all gathered around the fire. Smoke lifted his rifle. The slug just missed Dick's head. Rock fragments bloodied his face and sent the outlaw hugging the ground. Another slug punched a hole in the coffee pot and coffee spewed out into the fire. Paul Mellum jumped up and jerked his rifle to his shoulders.
Damn it! Rush him! Drive him back! If you don't, he'll pick us off one at a time! It's our only chance! Come on, let's go!
Von Hausen leaped from his position and zigzagged a few yards forward. The hired guns couldn't hang back while the man who was paying them risked his life. They charged too, running and ducking and twisting. Smoke faded back and slipped away into the waning light of early evening. Roy Drum found his tracks. Cautiously, the men followed the tracker.
He's running hard! See how his moccasins is digging in? He's way ahead of us!
The men pressed on, cautious but eager for the kill. Smoke jumped into the saddle and headed straight back for the camp, while the main body of men were a good 3/4 of a mile away and getting further. Smoke hit the camp like a tornado. Marlene grabbed for a rifle just as the shoulder of Smoke's horse hit her and knocked her sprawling. Andrea ran from the onslaught. Smoke leaned over in the saddle, grabbed her by the belt, and lifted her off the ground. Smoke dumped her unceremoniously on her butt in the river. Smoke turned and headed back for the camp. Maria was lifting a rifle to her shoulder when Smoke started putting rounds from a 6-gun into the ground around her feet. Maria took off running. With the reins in his teeth, Smoke grabbed her by the seat of her pants and turned her flipping and rolling. Smoke stampeded the horses then, sending them racing in all directions. Then he made a final pass through the camp, tearing down the second big tent and dragging it into the fire. Marlene was just getting to her feet.
I'll kill you, Smoke Jensen!
Smoke turned and raced toward her. He grabbed her by that shirt collar and dragged her toward the river just as Andrea was reaching shore. He tossed Marlene into Andrea. Smoke headed out, driving the frightened horses ahead of him. When the men got back into camp, or what was left of it, they were out of breath from running. Von Hausen jerked his pith helmet off his head and threw it on the ground.
He's taking the women!
I say he's damn welcome to them.
There's two of them.
Utah Red pointed to the river. Marlene and Andrea were climbing out of it, slopping and sloshing to the bank.
I'll kill him slow. I swear it'll take him days to die.
Maria got to her feet. Her face was skinned from her abrupt, hard slide to the ground. Gunter ran to her side, but she shoved him back.
He put his goddamned hands on me. Treated me like dirt. Me. $5,000 for the man who kills Smoke Jensen.
I'll add 5,000 more.
And I'll add 5,000 to that.
Now, ladies, our mission is to get to Dodge City. We simply can't.
Go right straight to hell. I want Smoke Jensen dead.
There was no placating the women, so Von Hausen soon gave up trying. They had been manhandled and humiliated by Jensen, and none of them were forgiven creatures. But as Von Hausen thought about it, sitting and drinking coffee that night, maybe they were right. The women maintained that they would never reach Dodge City, that Smoke Jensen would track him down and kill them all, and that it was just a matter of time. John Flagg recollected that Smoke had traveled clear across country to New Hampshire one time to settle a score. So why not just deal with him now? Von Hausen started to argue that surely Jensen wouldn't come to Europe to settle a score. but he'd shut his mouth before the words could form. Jensen probably would do that, and Von Hausen was going to do something else. He'd set up a code word with the lawyer in Dodge City, a code word that would release the money to the men, a little item he had kept from everyone. As soon as they got into a town with a telegraph office, he'd free up the money and take his party into Canada. They would travel east and sail out of port there, even though he would have to be friendly with those damnable French for a time. He felt better now that that was settled in his mind. Now all they had to deal with was Smoke Jensen, Von Hausen thought ruefully. And for the first time on this long hunt, he admitted to himself that he had made a mistake in chasing Smoke Jensen.
Get off your damn horse.
Frank Clover froze in the saddle. He didn't want it in the back. He'd shot men in the back, but he didn't want to go out that way. He dismounted and raised his hands. He turned to face the man whom he knew was about to kill him.
You should have stayed at the hole.
Frank tried. He got as far as closing his fingers around the butt of his .45. Smoke unsaddled the horse and turned him loose. He left Frank Clover stretched out on the trail. Both his guns were still in leather. He should have listened to his mother and stayed on the farm in Minnesota. John Flagg found the body and looked nervously around him. He was growing increasingly nervous until Joe Elliott and Terry Smith rode up. That made him feel better.
You're all gonna die.
A rock about the size of a grapefruit came hurling down from a mesa and slammed into Joe Elliott's shoulder. Another rock about the size of a big fist came flying down and hit Terry Smith in the head, knocking him flat on the ground and unconscious. John Flagg hit the saddle and got the hell gone from that crazy place. Joe Elliott looked up and saw Smoke Jensen standing in the rocks above him.
Strip, right down to the skin. Then get your canteen and pour some water on your buddy on the ground.
Elliott peeled down to the pale buff. He was in very bad need of a bath. Terry could not talk due to his badly swollen and very busted jaw, but he could strip down, and he did. He was even nastier looking than Elliott.
Start hiking.
The pair did as they were told. It was going to be a very long, very painful walk back to camp. Smoke just shook his head when he spotted the women the next morning. They were riding without men. Smoke concluded they were either the dumbest damn females he had ever run into, or just so arrogant that they didn't realize the danger they were in. He decided on the latter. He flattened out and let them come on. His clothing blended with the earth, and Smoke had the patience of an Apache. Preacher drilled into his head that many times movement gives away position more than noise. As they drew closer, Smoke thought again that this was not his favorite terrain for fighting. He liked the high mountains and deep timber. Where he was now was rocky and sparse. There were peaks there. Roughlock Peak was to his north, Dead Man Butte lay to the west, but nothing to compare to the High Lonesome. Andrea made up his mind. The women reined up about 10 feet from him.
This is a good spot. I'll stay here, Marlene. You ride on about 250 yards. Maria, you ride on an equal distance past Marlene. We've got rocks behind us and a good field of view in front of us. As long as we stay within shouting distance of each other, we'll be fine.
Maria and Marlene drove on. Andrea dismounted. The last thing she would remember for about an hour was something crashing into her jaw.
What the hell do you mean she's gone?
I mean she's vanished. One minute she was there, the next minute she was gone. The tracks lead straight north.
Break camp! Jensen's got her!
The men had found most of their horses and repaired the cinch straps. They quickly saddled up and broke camp.
You are the most despicable man I have ever met in all my life. This is outrageous. I have never been treated like this in my life. This is kidnapping. I will have you arrested.
Shut up.
Smoke had tied Andrea's hands to the saddle horn, and he was now seriously considering wrapping a sack around her mouth.
I suppose you intend to violate me?
You have to be kidding. I'd sooner bed down with a skunk.
Well, you are certainly no gentleman. You are a brute and a boorish oaf.
Lady, shut up. Go right ahead and squall, lady. No one's going to hear you. In case you're interested in geography, that's Roughlock Hill right over there.
I hate you. I despise you. I loathe you.
This is really going to be a fun trip. I can sense that right off.
Where are you taking me, you pig?
To the mountains, lady. I'm glad you had sense enough to bring a coat with you. You're going to need it.
Why did you kidnap me?
So the others will follow.
I shall have you whipped to death, you barbarian.
Right, lady.
If you attempt to violate me, I shall give you no satisfaction.
You're as safe with me as you would be in a nunnery.
Don't you find me beautiful?
In the same way a rattlesnake is pretty.
These bonds are too tight. My hands hurt.
My ears hurt.
On the third night out, Andrea finally got it through her head that Smoke was not going to violate her precious, wonderful, flawless, perfect body. And that made her madder than the kidnapping. The man was infuriating. He seemed to sleep with one eye open. She couldn't escape because Smoke tied a rope around her waist and the other end to his arm before they went to bed. Three times she tried to slip away. Three times Smoke had jerked her back to the ground so hard that her eyes had crossed, her teeth had rattled, and her butt hurt from the impact.
Why don't you sleep with me tonight?
I'm married, lady.
She isn't here.
Yes, she is, in my mind.
Is she beautiful?
Yes.
She probably weighs 300 pounds and has a head like a hawk. You'll find me amusing.
I find you dangerous, Andrea. Vicious and unfeeling and very dangerous.
It was only a game, Mr. Jensen.
Lady, you people were gonna kill me.
When this started, we thought of it as the ultimate hunt. You are depicted as a notorious gunfighter, a killer. We assumed there would be arrest warrants on you, that no one would care if you got killed.
Stop it, Andrea. You're lying. Stop lying. You found out about me before the hunt started. You could have stopped it before you left Dodge, and you killed that army patrol. A cold-blooded ambush. So stop lying and making excuses for yourself and your lousy damn friends. And Andrea, I buried your husband. We talked at length before he died. You shot him with that little hideout gun I took from you, and he didn't die easy.
If you turn me over to the police, I won't be prosecuted.
I know that. I don't know what I'm going to do with you, but believe this, Andrea. If you believe nothing else, if you try to kill me, I'll hurt you bad.
Big, brave man, aren't you?
No, just a man who's trying to survive. Now shut your mouth and go to sleep.
And if I don't?
I'll stuff a gag in your big mouth.
He's leading us back into the mountains. Just as sure as hell, that's what he's doing.
And then?
He'll start killing us. That's why he grabbed Andrea, so we'd follow him.
Heading back to the mountains, and he'll make his final stand there, won't he?
Well, you better believe it. Howling and snarling and spitting and scratching and shooting.
John T. looked back at the men of the group.
If any of you boys feel like you're coming down with a case of yellow belly, get gone now. Because once we get up in the high lonesome, there ain't going to be no running.
No one left. They all sat their saddles and stared at the man. Defiance in their eyes.
Don't say you wasn't warned. Let's ride.
Smoke rode through Powder River Pass and took a deep breath of the cool, clear air. He smiled, smelling the fragrance of the high country. He was home. Halfway between there and Cloud Peak, he set up his first ambush point. After securing Andrea's mouth so she could not scream and warn her bloodthirsty friends.
Now, you be a sweet girl now.
Andrea fought her bonds and tried to kick her.
Relax, Andrea. You're making your bonds tighter.
She soon realized he was right, and she ceased her frantic struggling. She fell back on the ground and just glared hate at him.
Hans was probably glad to die after being married to you.
Smoke picked up his rifle and moved to a spot several miles away. Smoke watched the long, single-file column come up the old trail. Roy Drum watching the ground, tracking Smoke like the expert he was. Roy passed within 10 feet of Smoke. Ed Clay was the last man in the column. When the rider in front of him had rounded the sharp bend in the trail, a place Smoke had deliberately chosen, Smoke leaped from the ledge and knocked Ed out of the saddle. Smoke threw Ed across his shoulder, grabbed his rope from his saddle horn, and slapped the horse on the rump, sending it back down the trail. Smoke slipped into the brush and climbed back up to the ledge. There, he hog-tied Ed and gagged him with the hired gun's own filthy bandana, and picked up his rifle, slipping back into the brush, paralleling the trail. Sandy was quickly getting tired of this trip. He was a man that lived for excitement and danger, and this was just plain goddamn boring. Then he saw the stick of dynamite come sputtering out of a ridge above him.
Sandy, get down!
Marlene's horse reared up at the huge explosion and threw her off. Smoke added more confusion to the riders on the trail by jerking out his left-hand six-gun and emptying it into the air. John Flagg struggled to get his horse under control and finally managed to jerk his .45 out of leather. Smoke quickly drew his other Colt. John Flagg's horse bolted and ran right over Maria, knocking the woman over the side of the slope. Smoke lit another stick of dynamite and dropped it to the trail below him. Slick Finger Bob was tossed out of the saddle and landed on his belly on the trail. Then the mountain trail grew quiet. John T. motioned toward Cat Brown to take the south end of the trail while he climbed a bank on the north end. It only took a couple of minutes for him to see that Jensen was gone. The camp looked like a field hospital. Dick Dorman and Von Hausen were stretched out side by side. Maria was off to one side, badly shaken and bruised. Utah Red had hurt his leg on the way down the slope. Slick Finger Bob had a cut on his face and a knot on one knee. One Eye had an egg-sized lump on his noggin from a rock that was flung by the multiple explosions. Gunter knelt down beside Von Hausen.
Two dead. Several of the men are injured, but not seriously.
The spirit of the men?
As long as we keep paying them, they'll continue.
We'll continue as long as he has Andrea. We really have no choice now, do we?
Cat Brown rode back in and swung down.
I found Jensen's tracks. He's heading straight north. The woman's still with him.
And leaving tracks a fool could follow.
That's right, boss.
We'll rest here and push on at first light.
Marlene glared at him. There was a grimness in his voice that she had never heard before. She wondered what it meant.
When are you going to turn me loose?
Supper was over. Andrea had the rope around her waist, the knot so tight she had broken off her nails trying to loosen them, to no avail.
When the hunt is over.
You mean after you've killed them all? I could talk to Frederick. I am sure he would cease immediately once he sees I am safe and unhurt.
Frederick is mine. I'm going to kick his face in.
You! Frederick will destroy you. He is a skilled pugilist.
We'll see.
I've seen him fight two men at once and whip them both.
Good for him. In a ring?
Certainly. One of Frederick's opponents would tire, and the other would come in.
Rules to it, eh?
But of course.
I'll have to say a little prayer before going to bed tonight. Then when we do lock horns, Frederick doesn't beat me up too bad.
Now you're being sarcastic.
Go to sleep, your ladyship. Tomorrow's going to be very exciting.
Ed Clay heard a rustling behind him.
Huh?
Ed left the saddle and stared hard at the thick brush. The mid-morning was cloudy and cool, with the skies looking like rain. The bushes did not move again. For the first time, he noticed the thin vine that stretched across the trail. From ground level, he could see that it was attached to the bush that had moved. Ed got to thinking on that. Now, if the vine was attached to the bush, that meant that whoever jerked on it was...
Oh, hell, behind me.
That's right. You ready to die?
Do I have a choice?
You might. That's up to you.
The others are fanned out all over this mountain looking for you. You let me get back on my horse and I'm gone. That's a promise.
And why should I believe you?
Because I'm telling you the truth.
Tell me about the others.
They're bad ones. They got big money in their eyes. I got me a couple $100 from that baron or whatever it is, and that's enough to get me back to Missouri.
That's your home state?
Sure is. About 30 miles east of Springfield.
Well, then you best get gone.
Yes, sir.
Smoke watched Ed leave, and true to his word, he headed south without so much as looking back. Smoke stood up and began stalking those who hunted him. Henry Barton sat as gray and studied the stillness of the timber. He wished Jensen would step out and challenge him. He'd like to be the man who killed Smoke Jensen. He could write his own ticket after he'd done that.
Looking for me?
Henry knew he'd been suckered. He was right-handed, and Smoke had studied him, waiting for just the right moment. If he drew now, he'd be shooting across his body. But he just couldn't resist. He went for his gun. Terry Smith came galloping up the mountain trails. He reined up when he saw the gray, standing, riderless horse in the timber.
Here I am!
Terry wheeled his horse and lifted a six-shooter. Smoke faded back into the brush on the mountain and jogged to a small knoll set in the middle of the timber. He punched two more rounds into his rifle and eared the hammers back, waiting.
This here's Dick Dorman, Jensen. Joe Elliott's with me. We're gone. You hear me, Jensen? I got a broke ankle and Joe's shoulder busted, swole up. We're out of it and gone.
That bastard Von Housen just killed his own men. That dirty snake.
Montana Jess, Gil Webb, John T., Cat Brown, Utah Red, and Roy Drum were by now old hands at chasing Smoke. None of them were about to expose themselves and enter those dark woods. But the two left of the men from the hole just weren't that smart. Slick Finger Bob thought he was slicker than he was. He slipped into the timber unseen, or so he thought. And that was his last thought. One Eye tore his guns free of leather. Smoke picked up a rock and tossed it to his right. It thudded to the ground right next to One Eye.
Bit jumpy, One Eye.
One Eye staggered out, both hands holding his belly. He slumped to the earth. He was still on his knees when Smoke backed out and disappeared into the lushness of the timber. John T. slipped back and into the timber on the other side of the game trail Smoke had been using. One by one, the others joined him. They grouped together. Each man in the group eyeballed the corpses of Dick Dorman and Joe Elliott, all too aware that they had been backshot by the traitorous Von Housen.
Comes a time, boys, when a man's got to summon some common sense. Personal, I think we should have used about a month ago.
What are you saying, John?
That it's time for us to go. We got some money out of this, more than we'd make in 5 years ordinarily. Boys, we left bodies all over the place during this so-called hunt. It's time to pull out.
That's what Dorman and Elliott tried to do.
That ain't gonna happen to us now that we know what to expect.
How about our money down in Dodge?
Hell with it. We can take that check that Miss Hoity Toity wrote us back yonder in the park. How about it?
You boys go on. I want Jensen and the real big money.
It ain't worth dying for, Roy.
I'm with Roy. But we'll see to it that you don't get backshot.
I'm staying.
I'm going.
Gil Webb nodded in agreement with Montana. The six men walked over to Von Housen.
I'll take that big money check you offered back in the park. We're pulling out.
But who is we?
Me, Montana, and Gil. Hand over the check.
Von Housen noticed that the gunfighter's hand was close to the butt of a six-gun. He reached into his jacket and took out a waterproof pouch and opened it. He handed John T. the check. John T. looked at it, then folded it and put it in his pocket.
Thank you kindly, Von Housen. Roy and Utah and Cat will see to it that you good folks don't shoot us in the back on the way out. Adios, ladies and gents.
Does anybody have a plan?
Hire more men?
Forget it. No time for that.
I think I'll make a pot of coffee and fry up some bacon. What about them bodies?
Yeah, push them over the side of that ravine yonder. I don't feel like digging no damn holes.
We don't have a shovel anyways. He got lost yesterday when Jensen ambushed us.
Roy built a fire while Utah and Cat hauled the bodies away and shoved them over the side into the ravine. Roy had the bacon frying when the men returned.
It might work.
Von Housen looked at the trio of gun slicks.
Those are the hardest of the hard cases. We are a very small force now, and we'll be able to move faster and much more quietly. What?
What's the matter?
I thought I heard something, a yell. Yes, I'm sure I did.
Cut me! That Andrea! She has escaped!
I doubt it. Jensen probably got tired of listening to her complain and cut her loose.
Roy, Utah, Kat, go get her!
You hired us to kill Jensen, not fine lost females. Just give a shout or two. She'll wander over here.
Heartless brutes.
Right, lady.
After a few minutes, Andrea staggered in and collapsed by the fire.
Oh, it was awful. He beat me, and then he raped me over and over.
You're a goddamn liar. He wouldn't touch the likes of you with a coup stick. I hate Smoke Jensen, but he never raped no woman in his life. I'd be willing to bet everything I own he ain't never even been unfaithful to his wife. So why don't you just shut your lying damn mouth?
Andrea glared hatred at Roy, but she said no more about being assaulted.
He said he was going to whip you in a fight, Frederick. Said he was going to kick your face in.
Nonsense! The man has better sense than to think he could best me in the ring. I've fought the best of the fighters and never lost. He was just blowing off steam, that's all.
Don't tangle with Jensen in a fist fight, because you'll lose.
Oh, ridiculous!
Don't say you wouldn't warn.
What else did he say, Andrea?
That tomorrow, you all die.
It was a sensation, an emotion, that all skilled gun handlers experienced at one time or the other. That feeling of knowing that today is the day. Utah and Kat and Roy knew it. They didn't speak of it, but each knew the other was sharing the same emotion.
Are you ready to die?
Let's do it. Let's, by God, get this over with once and for all.
Roy picked up his rifle and walked to the edge of the timber that surrounded the camp. Kat looked at Utah. Both men shook their heads. They rose as one and saddled their horses.
What are you men doing?
Pulling out, lady.
What about your money?
I spec the John T. knows a way to shake it out of that Dodge City lawyer fella. If he don't, I do.
Smoke! Me and Kat are the only ones left. We're pulling out. I'd be obliged if you'd keep these foreigners from backshooting us.
I'll do that. I let a couple of others go. I'll do the same for you boys.
Appreciate it. See you around, Smoke.
I hope not, because when you do, you better drag iron.
It was just a job of work.
Get out of here before I change my mind.
They got.
Either strap on guns or toss them in a pile.
Kill him, Gunther! Kill the arrogant bastard!
But Gunther had lost the taste for the hunt. He unbuckled his belt and let his sidearm fall to the ground.
You coward!
Maria jerked up a pistol and emptied it into the dark timber.
You missed, lady!
Marlena grabbed up a rifle and fired at Smoke's voice.
Over here!
Andrea just put her face into her hands. Marlene threw the rifle to the ground and stood trembling with rage.
The army's coming. I saw the patrol about an hour ago from a ridge. They had some rough country to go through, so I figured they'll be here in about an hour or so. Then, I'll do what somebody should have done a long time ago.
And what is that?
Stomp your fucking guts out!
I accept your challenge, gunfighter. But why wait until the army gets here? I don't understand that.
Because I don't trust any of you and your backshoot bastards and bitches.
Monhausen removed his gun belt and tossed it to one side.
All of you, put your weapons in a pile. Every weapon. All the military can do is escort us to the ship. We might as well have some fun waiting for them to get here.
Every weapon, including hunting knives, was piled onto a blanket. Monhausen pointed to a long, flat rock about 3 feet high.
All of you sit over there, and do not, under any circumstances, try to assist me in any way during this brief boxing match. Is that satisfactory, Mr. Jensen?
Suits me.
Smoke hung his gun belt on a limb and pulled on a pair of leather work gloves.
We'll now set the rules.
No guns or knives. Those are the rules. No time limit, no neutral corner, no knockdown rules. So anytime you're ready, you pompous, overbearing, arrogant jackass, come on and fight.
Monhausen assumed the boxer's stance. His left fist held out from his body, elbow bent. His right fist up, protecting his jaw.
You may approach and make the initial move, Jensen.
Okay.
Monhausen backed up, not really hurt, just startled at such a move. He flicked an exploring punch at Smoke. Smoke ducked it and busted Von Hausen in the belly.
Oh, foul it! Foul!
Smoke ignored Gunter and pressed Von Hausen. Smoke smiled and backed up.
You're a peasant!
Smoke put one of his peasant fists through the nobleman's guard and busted Von Hausen's regal nose. Smoke ducked a punch and waded in, smashing both fists against the man's belly. Smoke caught Von Hausen's forearm, turned slightly, and flipped the heavier man, sending him hard to the ground. Quick as a snake, Von Hausen was up and trying to get set. Smoke never let him.
Time! Time out! Shut your damn mouth! Get up, Baron.
Baron was a little slow getting up. He raised his hands, and Smoke started to punch about a foot behind his shoulder, and he flat out gave it to Von Hausen. As the man was sinking to his knees, Smoke came under his jaw with an uppercut.
Frederick!
Marlene ran to Von Hausen's side. Smoke walked over to Gunter, and before the startled man could move, Smoke pointed a finger at Maria and Andrea.
If you two even so much as twitch, I'll shoot you.
Smoke walked over to Von Hausen, jerked off the man's wide leather belt, and grabbed Marlene by her long blonde hair. He dragged her over to the rock, sat her down across his knees, and proceeded to give her fanny a long overdue beating with his belt.
You brute!
Smoke smiled and jerked Maria across his knee. When Smoke finished, he dumped Maria on the ground and dangled the belt for Andrea to see.
You have anything to say to me?
Andrea just shook her head and kept her big mouth shut. Gunter crawled around on his hands and knees, his mouth a bloody mess. He got to his feet and leaned against a rock for support. He didn't need it.
Oh, no.
Oh, yeah.
The Army Patrol, who had arrived at the scene just seconds after Smoke and Frederick squared off, and whose members had thoroughly enjoyed every moment of the thrashing and spankings, rode into the clearing. The officer saluted Smoke.
Captain Williams, sir. We've come to escort these people to the nearest train depot and see that they leave this country.
You can sure have them. No way they can be held accountable?
I don't think so, Mr. Jensen. Their families have a lot of political influence in this country. Statesmen and diplomats and that sort of thing.
Smoke told the captain about Hans and where he was buried.
All right, Prince Hans Brodermann's parents personally. He really wasn't a bad sort of fellow.
Why did he get mixed up with this bunch?
Smoke looked over at the now not quite so haughty Marlene.
Well, I reckon, Captain, that the man had a good eye for horses and mighty poor judgment when it came to picking friends.
Smoke Jensen, The Mountain Man 9, Pursuit of the Mountain Man, is a graphic audio production. Copyright 1990, William W. Johnstone. Production copyright 2009, The Cutting Corporation. All rights reserved. Published by arrangement with the Kensington Publishing Corporation. All rights reserved. Performed by Mort Shelby, James Lewis, David Coyne, Terrence Aselford, Richard Rowan, Joe Brack, Ken Jackson, Dylan Lynch, Tim Getman, Tom Simpson, Elizabeth Jernigan, Nanette Savard, Colleen Delaney, Chris Rowan, and Nathaniel Perry. Additional Boot Hill Boys by the Dead Giveaways. Directed by Johann Detweiler. produced by Dwayne Beeman and Richard Rowe. Executive producers, James Cutting, Mary Cutting, and Angie Cornett. Dialogue editing and graphic audio sound design by Brian Patton. Original music composed and performed by Brian Patton and Johann Detweiler. Book adapted for graphic audio by Johann Detweiler. If you enjoyed Pursuit of the Mountain Man, read the Pinnacle Edition. Visit www.kensingtonbooks.com. And be sure to look for William W. Johnstone's The First Mountain Man, Blood Bond, The Last Gunfighter, Eagles, and Sidewinder series, all available in graphic audio at Road Stops Everywhere at 1-800-670-5220 or at www.graphicaudio.net, where you'll find samples of all our Action Pump titles, as well as free downloads and podcasts. Now, keep listening for exciting previews of other graphic audio titles. We appreciate it.
Now, in graphic audio, Jerry Ahern's The Survivalist, Midwake, Part 2.
Sonar's picking up Soviet scout subs, Captain. But, sir, it looks as though their own island-class submarines are pursuing them.
Sonar, talk to me.
Sir, I've got 4 Soviet scout subs proceeding at flank speed, but rather erratically. I have 3 island-class, 4 island-class submarines in the classic Soviet pursuit formation. None of the island-class submarines is dragging a sonar array.
Very good, Lieutenant Kelly. Keep on it.
First officer, order battle station.
Aye, sir. Ordering battle stations now.
Now hear this. Now hear this. All hands battle stations. Say again. All hands battle stations. This is not a drill.
Who the hell are you?
I am Captain Alexei Sarovsky of the elite corps of the Committee for State Security of the Soviet Union, under command of Hero Marshal Vladimir Karamazov. You are under arrest.
Sam!
Where are you supposed to bring me, Captain?
Comrade Major, have you no loyalty?
Oh, I have loyalty. But unlike your loyalty, it is not misplaced. This is a very fine knife, and I imagine it is very sharp. And if you know me by reputation, you know that I am very good with a knife. Either tell me where you are to meet Marshal Karamazov and when, or we will both find out together just how sharp this very knife happens to be.
You wouldn't. Oh!
Karamazov! When land and sea collide, Survivalist, Midwake, Part 2. Available now in graphic audio.
Serrano Legacy, Book 7, Against the Odds, Part 1, in graphic audio.
What?
Hands on your head.
Don't move.
What's going on?
I have orders to separate you from the regular space service as of today.
I haven't done anything wrong.
Fleet has no place for your kind.
Squeeza, Esme, most recent rank 03, separated by order of Admiral Serrano? Grandmother, she double-crossed us.
Bad news.
What?
Peter Origemos, Consuline's foreign minister. Mother, killed him.
Miranda, you can't expect me to let it go.
Damn and blast, Cecilia. The man had my husband killed. He was a despicable, slimy...
Leave the Familius. I'll take you.
Haltbreach! Haltbreach! Report all starboard aft teams.
Sir, we've got a peak our chem scan doesn't identify. Something with a molecular weight of 16.
16? Lieutenant, didn't I tell you to look out for methane?
Emergency! We have a potentially explosive gas mix.
Sir, I'm scared. I can't just stand here.
Sure you can. Smartest thing you can do.
No! Don't leave me behind!
No! Don't!
If you can't find that graphic audio title you're looking for, go to www.graphicaudio.net, where you can order it in CD format or digital download. If you're on the road, call 1-800-670-5220. That's 1-800-670-5220 or www.graphicaudio.net. And if you're looking for a great way to try out a different graphic audio series, check out our convenient and easy-to-store long-haul box sets that include 5 books of a series, available only at www.graphicaudio.net.